by raycon.com/trn and get 15% off.
Everybody needs, not wants, Freeman, needs Absolute. A good pair of wireless earbuds. And you can spend hundreds of dollars. We're going to tell you about the Raycon E25. It's the latest and best version of their wireless earbuds. I was a little bit skeptical because I have some that I like. And I put these on and I was really amazed by the bass. Recently, I've been doing a lot of flights on planes and I've been using the Raycon, and I prefer them over that other pair that I have because it fits so comfortably and snugly inside your ear that it cancels out noises.
In fact, I wanted to share the experience with my daughter. She put them on and immediately her eyes got big and she goes, "Whoa, these are noise canceling."
You know, these earbuds were founded by Ray G and other celebrities like Snoop Dogg. Snoop Dogg knows something about music. He knows something about sound. If he's putting his name behind it, these are really good headphones. Get your 15% off if you go to buyraycon.com/TRN. That's buyraycon.com/TRN.
Great price. They do not compromise their performance.
Feels.com, F-E-A-L-S.com. It's quality premium CBD delivered straight to your door.
Do you experience stress, have anxiety, chronic pain, or have trouble sleeping at least once a week? You're not alone. Many of us do, and you might know somebody that does.
I find that when I take Feels, it gives me that quality sleep that I need to recover and get ready for the stressful morning.
Feels is a premium CBD product delivered directly to your doorstep. You don't need to go out and try to find a place to buy it.
Here's how they differentiate themselves. They have real human support. You don't know a lot about CBD? Give them a call. They'll help you find out which dosage to take, how to take it. They're actually just very helpful to help you understand and feel comfortable.
And it's easy to take. Just put a few drops underneath your tongue and you could feel the difference within minutes.
You can get 50% off your first order with free shipping if you go to Feels, feals.com/TRN.
And get a 50% discount on your first order.
Become a member and get 50% off your first order.
And that's 50% off your first order when you subscribe to the membership.
All right, we ready?
Yeah.
Poor miserable me, I'm having cramps. And this person over here is flying by me.
You're recording this, aren't you, Freeman?
I get everything. All right. Are we ready?
Yeah.
Hey, why don't you kick us off here, AJW?
All right. Hey, hello, everybody. This is Trail Runner Nation, and I'm AJW.
I'm Scott Warren.
And I'm Don Freeman.
I love it when Don pushes the red button, red record button before we're actually just not, we're not even sitting down yet.
Scott was doing a lot of prepping here, just talking to us about what we're going to talk about. And I thought, let's just talk about it. AJW, what's the topic today?
You know what? Today we are going to talk about something that's, I think, really relevant, especially as spring is on the horizon, hopefully, in many parts of the Northern Hemisphere, and that is motivation and discipline. And some of us may have a race on the calendar this spring or summer, and we might still be battling the cold and the dark of the late winter. And so we thought motivation and discipline would be a good topic for today.
Yeah, and some of us may need some motivation to sign up for a race. So this is good for all.
Absolutely.
What? Let's talk about the difference between motivation and discipline, just as from a definition standpoint. I think of motivation as, the Cornhusker. What was that? Basketball movie with Gene Hackman?
Oh, you're asking me about a movie?
Yeah.
Hoosiers.
Is it Jaws? They're sitting in at halftime, and Gene Hackman is giving this rah-rah speech about them being better people, and it doesn't matter whether you win or lose, but let's go out and win anyway, and they're all motivated, and they're giving high fives. That's what I think of as motivation. Is that, you think, a good definition?
It's always good to define a concept based on a scene from a movie.
Yeah, that's why Don doesn't watch movies.
I'll throw this out there: motivation versus discipline, and then you guys can pick it apart. So motivation is what starts the process. It what gets you excited and sets the bar or the goal. But discipline is needed to obtain it. So you need motivation has to be the first piece, and then discipline is the structure to accomplish that. So
riffing off both of those things, I would say that motivation is a state of mind. You know, motivation is something that's in your mind, and discipline's a state of being. Like, discipline suggests to me action. Right. And motivation is something that comes to you and doesn't come to you. It might be a little bit more ethereal, might need some sort of external factor like a speech somebody gives or something like that. Whereas discipline has to be more internal, and it has to be like, okay, I've got to get out the door and get this workout in.
So like a speech like Gene Hackman gave, what did he say, Scott, that brings that to your mind?
Win one for the Gipper?
Yeah.
I think that motivation is emotional, and emotions can be very up and very down. And so it's a limited resource. Motivation is needed to get things started, to get the fire started. But discipline is more about habit, about getting things done, whether you feel like it, whether the emotion feels like it or not.
Well, I'm going to add something in there, AJW, if I can, because I talked about motivation and discipline, setting a goal, signing up for a race, and then putting the training together, the discipline to do that. But even as we go through this discussion, how about motivation and discipline throughout the race that you did sign up for? You have to be motivated to get to the next spot or get to up that hill. And so you're going to juggle those two emotions or those two things throughout the entire process. So I think there's a lot to do.
I do think that notion of during the race, I distinctly recall I was pacing a buddy. This was now years ago at Wasatch. And at mile 75, he was just completely out of gas, and he wanted to take a nap. He kind of took a nap for an hour, and then eventually just said, "Forget it, I'm dropping." And at Wasatch, they have they require you to go and talk to the guy at the desk who has the clipboard, and turn in your wristband and tell him that you're dropping. And this grumpy old guy is there, and he says, "Hey, what's your reason for dropping?" Right, there's this column where you put your name, your number, and your reason. And this poor guy, my buddy Rob, he's like, "What is it?" What? And he goes, "Loss of will." and of course, the old guy wrote it down: loss of will. You know, there's medical and there's stomach, and that's kind of what you're talking about, right? You can get to a point where in a race, in a training cycle, in a whole lot of parts of life, where you just kind of lose the will to continue. And, you know, you've got to figure out a way to train and mitigate against that. And maybe that's where discipline comes into the factor.
So Andy, as a coach, when people sign up and make a contract with you as a coach, it sounds like that the motivation is not a problem. They've been motivated to say, "Hey, I want to do something. I need a coach." They sign up and they say, "Andy, coach me on how to do this." Do they lack motivation, or is it a lack of discipline?
And maybe they're using you as their motivation. Maybe they're applying for your
discipline,
or both. Let's find out.
Typically, when I get a referral for a coaching project with somebody, I will ask them, because I've kind of learned that there's sort of two things that compel people to want to have a coach. One is they may not have any problem running. They enjoy running. They get out every day, but they want the structure of the training. They want something that's backed up by science. You know, they want that part of it. And so I'll say, "Are you that kind of athlete, or do you actually need a coach that's going to kick you in the butt and make you get out with your headlamp before work and hold you accountable?" And I think when you get that second kind of athlete, that's the kind of piece that you're talking about. I would say first and foremost, if they're an athlete that needs that accountability, that kick in the butt, it's typically because they maybe have had, they're one of those people that's always starting a training program. You know, they're one of those people that is making, always makes a New Year's resolution and then gives up on it, you know, by the middle of January. Like, there are those kind of people, right? And so I think having that other person there to motivate them, to get them out the door, to get them focused is really important. One of the key things, though, and I really, whether you're signing up for an event or you want to do a double crossing of the Grand Canyon or you want to climb a mountain, whatever it is that's your target, whether it's a short-term target or a long-term target, you have to have like emotional connection to it. You have to be, so my greatest example, of course, is Western States. Like every year when I was in Western States, because I had such an emotional connection to the event, I just didn't want to fail. And literally every day for 6 months, that's what I thought about. I had a connection to that event that motivated me. It was implicit in the thing. Sometimes you get athletes who don't have that. They just, hey, I want to get in shape, or I want to run a little faster for a marathon, but they're not emotionally engaged. I think they're a lot more difficult to motivate.
Can that change over time? So, for example, we had a podcast not too long ago about comebacks, where you have a layoff, whether it's for whatever reason, and now you're doing a comeback. And let's say that, you know, you have this emotional attachment to Western States and you're motivated and you don't want to fail, and you put together the training plan that structures the discipline that you need to do to get the training done. But then there's whatever kind of a layoff and you're coming back and for some reason there's not either the emotional attachment or motivation or the discipline to get it done.
Yeah, I certainly, that was a really poignant conversation we had with Sally a couple of months back about comebacks. It seems to me that that there can be kind of a tipping point with motivation, where if you're teetering on that, well, maybe I could get out there, maybe I couldn't, maybe I'll pull the trigger and sign up for this race, maybe I won't, I'm out of shape, but I'll go do the race anyway. There can be some wavering on that tipping point, and if you're wavering, you're unlikely to really follow through because it's going to be hard and it's going to require, you know, putting your head down and moving forward. But then it feeds on itself. Each successive day that you're doing something, you're becoming better at it and your training is there. And then you just kind of, it steamrolls. So for example, for me right now with Hard Rock on the horizon, I just have the elevation profile taped to my bathroom mirror. Nice. Right. So I see it every morning when I am brushing my teeth, and it's like, okay, well, I got to get out there and get after it, even if I don't feel like it. So there's all kinds of little tricks. But that then fuels the discipline to like, okay, I've got to get out there. I've got to do this. I can't do the same thing every day. And it can become a self-fulfilling prophecy, I think.
So I want to dig in a little bit. If you find yourself with loss of discipline or motivation, let's figure out why. Let's kind of dig in and find out how to get yourself out of that rut. What I just heard you say is that I have the motivation because I don't want to fail at this. It's my shot this year to run a race that I love and that I know this is going to be hard, so you're motivated, and therefore the discipline comes into place. Sometimes you can wake up without the alarm. There's no question when you get up. You're not negotiating with yourself. Am I running today or not? No, you're just flat running. The decision was made before you went to bed because you were motivated. So the discipline falls in line with the motivation. So what if you're losing motivation? There must be a reason. So if you look back to it, it might be because your training's out of balance. Maybe you've been just training too hard. Maybe your lack of sleep. Maybe your diet's off. Maybe you're just not fresh enough with your training. You need to mix something else in to re-engage so that you're excited about it again. So if you've lost the discipline, you're missing things, and you say, but I'm not motivated, there must be some kind of reason. With that, do you guys have some Some thoughts on that?
Well, I think, yeah, when I've encountered people in my own circumstances with my own loss of motivation, but and also talking with others, it really, I mean, it really requires almost a counseling approach. It certainly helps to talk to someone else and say, hey, I'm just not motivated. I don't know why. And then have that person literally say, well, you know, you kind of go through the checklist. Well, what's changed in your life? You know, you were motivated last year. What are you doing this year? And it could have nothing to do with running. It could be your job has more stress, your family situation is different, you're having health or diet issues. You know, it could be any number of things. And sometimes just talking through, okay, maybe that's it. Maybe that's why I'm losing motivation, is because my job's taking more out of me or whatever. And you're not able to keep it fresh. I think the other thing to ask is, okay, back 2 years ago when I was really motivated, what was going on then?
Right.
And can I replicate that now? Maybe you can, maybe you can't. You know, you're not going to get faster. You're not going to get, you know, you're not going to get less injury prone. You're not, but there are some things you can control. Maybe if you think about those things and sort of visualize those things, that can jumpstart your motivation. But it's difficult because you're the person who has to get yourself out of that hole. No one else can get you out of it for you.
You know, I'm going to read you a portion of an article that I think is very good, that relates to motivation and discipline, because a lot of times I put them in separate buckets, that you have to have motivation to start the fire. Okay, that's the match. You light the match, that puts it on there. But the discipline is making sure that there's fuel there, there's logs on the fire. If you don't put the log on, the fire's not going to continue to burn.
Nice metaphor.
That was a great anecdote.
you can't claim your own things are great, Scott.
Okay, but here's what a person named Gro Jordalen from the Norwegian School of Sports Science studied the correlation between motivation and self-discipline in athletes, and she determined that elite athletes rely on both. She studied the national level athletes between 16 and 20 years old and determined that in the short term, they needed to be very disciplined to stay motivated. Let me rephrase that. I mean, state that again. In the short term, they needed to be very disciplined to stay motivated. For the long term, being motivated makes it easier to remain disciplined. Does that make sense?
Well, the second part fit my definition, so I like the second part. But the first part said you need to stay disciplined to remain motivated?
Yeah, in the short term, they needed to be very disciplined to stay motivated. So,
okay.
So let's take Andy's hard rock thing. You know, he has his little elevation chart taped to his mirror. The discipline of going out and doing the daily work, whether that's a morning run or cross training or whatever, you need to do the disciplined things to stay motivated. In the long term, being motivated makes it easier to remain disciplined. So his motivation
like
to do well.
Yeah. One feeds the other. And when you're hitting your marks and you are disciplined in your training, you sustain your motivation. And if you start missing, you're not disciplined, all of a sudden your motivation drops because you're fearful that you're not getting and going to be able to reach your goal. So you need both, and they're both important.
Yeah. Yeah. And I want to ask you, Don, because this article that I read in preparation for the podcast, it talked about Marines. Marines are disciplined. You go in as a new recruit, and they teach you discipline. Tell us a little bit about that. What does discipline mean to you from what you've learned as a Marine?
Well, you know, discipline was one of the characteristics that was instilled in a Marine, because with discipline you can accomplish many things. You need to be able to stay on task, stay focused on that goal, and every little step requires that discipline. I'm not saying anything.
Makes sense. Well, let me ask you a question on that. You said every little step.
Yeah.
I mean, discipline in a Marine is down to how you make your bed.
And so those are
how you shine your shoes. That has nothing to do, at least from an outsider's point of view, doesn't make me a better fighter, but it actually does.
No, it has everything to do with it, because you're practicing some discipline in a space that will apply later. That skill set of discipline, whether it's a well-shined shoe in a tight rack, is just as important as whatever you're doing, maybe on the battlefield or taking care of aircraft or whatever your job is in the Marine Corps. So, yeah, it's those are skills that are emphasized and habits that are instilled during the basic training of the 3 months to make sure that you have developed those tools to apply to whatever your trade will be once you get out in the field.
So I had a that's fascinating, Don, and it brings me back to actually my childhood, where I went to a camp, a summer camp for boys. It was a sailing camp, but the camp director had a military background, and he was, yeah, and so the camp had, you know, we divide, like a lot of boys camps back in the 70s, sort of we divided up into troops and we had competitions, and he talked a lot about discipline. And one of the things, he wasn't a particularly religious guy, but he did say, gentlemen, keep in mind that the root of the word discipline is disciple. Being disciplined is to follow something, not to necessarily. And one thinks of, you know, it's to follow something. So whether it's in the Marine Corps, you need to follow the standards of shining your shoe or making your bed a certain way or keeping your trunk a certain way. Similar to that requires that thing. So like you're saying, you're just following. You're just saying, I wake up in the morning, get my stuff on, get out the door, run my 7 miles, and then get on with my life. So I think that's really where discipline is different than motivation. With motivation, I love that quote, Scott. I was reminded, I wrote about this a few years ago in I Run Far. Daniel Pink, who's a thinker, he wrote A Whole New Mind, was his first bestseller, but he wrote a book called Drive, which was completely about motivation. And in Drive, he basically says, he throws motivation on it. The old school of that we're motivated by like job bonuses or getting more money or fame and fortune, like that these external factors aren't really as important motivators to humans as intrinsic things like we're talking about, just succeeding at running this race. And he says that out of motivation, I've got it right here, autonomy, he divides the things that motivate people are autonomy, mastery, and purpose. That people want to have that autonomous thing in their life that they have control over. Mastery, they want kind of the 10,000 hours. They want to be able to master something and be an expert in it, whether it's running or shooting a gun or, you know, giving a public speech. And purpose, that whatever you're doing has some purpose beyond just getting it done. And that those intrinsic motivators are in many ways more important than the extrinsic. So that is something that can be more leadership oriented, whereas discipline can be more kind of follower oriented. So I think it does, and it does require both to be successful in long distance running and in life, I think.
And I think that's where, you know, this is a fun discussion. That's where a coach or a training right. partner holds that motivation, because it's tough always to follow that line and to hold that discipline and keep that motivation or that fire. And back to the Marine Corps, you know, you have your squad or your unit that you're accountable to, and you have your jobs, so you're autonomous there, and you have your purpose. You have all three of those things that you're talking about. And happiness and for people, this is on to a somewhat of a different slant than the Marine Corps, but to not have the depression or to feel like an important part of a unit is when you have each one of those three things. And when tribes get too big, pretty soon people get lost. And when they get lost, they lose purpose and they lose their contribution. Everybody needs to be contributing to feel fulfilled in their place. When groups get too big, people start to fall out and feel insignificant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And one of the other things that I read was we need to maybe shift the paradigm of focusing on being motivated to focusing on the habits and routines from that you get from discipline.
Mm-hmm.
So if you wake up every morning and you're looking for motivation to go out on the run, it may not always be there. But if you have the discipline, it's a habit. I get up at 5 o'clock every morning and I go out for a 3 mile run, or I get up every morning and I do some stretching and some planks, and I have this habit and I do it whether I want to or not. The emotion is taken out of it. I don't need motivation to do it. It's disciplined. It's a habit. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and that's cognitive training, right? That's in your mind. You have to have that mindset and have it be non-negotiable. That really is discipline in its purest sense. When it doesn't take much. It's kind of like the New Year's resolution, or I'm going to start a diet. You know, it's really easy to fall off that wagon relatively quickly, and then all your discipline is gone. There are all kinds of tools, right? I mean, some people that I coach, they just look, they open up the calendar that has the workouts on it. And if they do the workout and they load it into to Training Peaks, it turns green. And if they do the workout, but it's not the way it should be, they didn't meet their targets, it turns yellow. And if they skip the workout, it turns red. For some people, that's motivation enough. They just don't want to see red on their calendar. For other people, there's a little thing you can push the button and you can make the colors not show up.
And so maybe that's one of the things that attracts us to running. We like to set the goal. It's inherent to who we are as humans to have goals and work towards them. And this allows us to express that humanity through our sport. And it also crosses over nice into real world, into making sure that we're trying to meet our professional goals or family goals or whatever they might be. This is just a nice little exercise, this trail running that we can do to help enhance the rest of our life.
So here's something. Weird out myself right now. So we're recording this podcast on February 28th, right? And so we get one extra day in February this year, tomorrow. And I've been building up my training for Hard Rock, I've been kind of targeting a monthly mileage goal. And so I counted my miles a couple of days ago and realized that if I ran 261.3 miles this month, I would have a 260 mile per month average for the last 4 months. Why that matters, I have no idea. But I'm gonna run exactly 12.1 miles tomorrow to hit that number. You know what? That motivates me. So
yeah. So find out what works for you and exercise it. But I want to go to now the back to your comment about green, yellow, and red days that you had there. I think those were your colors.
Yeah.
And it's important as an athlete not to drive yourself into the ground just to obtain your numbers. Your 12.1. Maybe that knee of yours needs a rest. Maybe it needs just a walk. And that give yourself permission to not hit that 12.1, because that's just an example, but you can go over and over of how many things that we push ourselves to do. So there's a double-edged sword with this equation we're talking about. Sometimes it's you have to have the discipline to back off.
And I will say,
I'm always looking to back off.
One of the questions I had is, okay, discipline. The way that we've to this point defined it is, for lack of a better word, a spreadsheet. This is the workout. These are the habits. I'm going to do this every Tuesday, this every Wednesday, and I'm going to do it whether I want to or not, whether I have the emotional attachment or not. But then there's the other side of the coin that we talk about so much on this podcast, which is listening to your body, like you were saying, Don. Mm-hmm. So how do you balance that on a teeter-totter of making sure that you're disciplined versus listening to your body and making sure that you take the days off that you need, even though it's a habit and by golly, it's Saturday and I'm going to run that 9 mile loop and regardless of whether, but if you have a little niggle, is that the word, niggle, or whatever? Do you take the day off or do you stay disciplined? And I think that's where a good coach comes into play, Andy.
How do you manage that with your athletes, Andy? You know,
even taking the day off requires discipline, right?
Right.
I mean,
yeah.
some people, if they might feel like they're going to get out of shape if they take a day off or if they don't hit their numbers. So the coach absolutely plays that role. I think, again, to answer your question, Don, it's an athlete by athlete decision, but there are athletes who need the coach for the nudge and to get them out the door. And then, and I have several of these, they're the athletes that need the coach to keep them reined in. Mm-hmm. You know, to force them to take the day off or do two recovery days, not one. Or to say, you know, I don't think you should run that run with everybody this week because it seems like you're getting a little bit tired, right? The other thing, too, is in addition to listening to your body, Scott, listen to what the athletes are saying. You know, if they say 3 days in a row, oh, that was a slog, I'm feeling tired, listen to that and point that out and say, you don't necessarily need to soldier through that stuff. Now, you do, you're not going to feel like you want to run every day. You're not going to feel like, you know, if you only go out and exercise when you're feeling great, you know, you're probably not going to achieve your goals. Part of what we, you know, the daily consistency grind of long distance running requires certain times where you're going to get out there. And, you know, when we had Courtney DeWalter on the podcast a couple of years ago, right, she talked about her unstructured training, but it's sort of like she goes out of her house and turns left. And if she feels like it, she ends up running for 2.5 hours. But if not, she turns around and she's back at her house in 45 minutes. That's discipline if you think about it. Right? Because it's unstructured and it's her own way of doing it. But that really is, you have to imagine sometime during that run, she's 20 minutes in and it's like, well, how's this going? Maybe I'll keep going and be off in the mountains for 3 hours, or, you know, I'm going to turn around, go back home and have another cup of coffee.
That's a good point. She has the discipline to go out of the door and start running. Mm-hmm. Where she's listening to her body is how far and how intense she's going. I like that example.
And that practicing that during training, listening to your body and responding to how you feel is the perfect stage to rehearse for race day, because you need to listen to your body, you know, at mile 10 or 20 or 30 or wherever you're at. You have to take inventory, make adjustments, and listen. How did that adjustment work? And so it's a constant negotiation and internal dialogue with and monitoring effort to be a polished and experienced racer. They practice these skills.
I'm glad you brought it back to race day. So, you know, my friend Rob and the loss of will, because in a long distance race, all of us at some point are going to feel like we don't want to continue anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, and it does take discipline to forge through, but we also need to just like, listen, you need to know whether, you know, dropping out of this race because I lost will, I'm going to regret this 2 hours later, or dropping out of this race because I've got something going on with my ankle and it's, you know, I'm going to compensate and could be injured for a whole year. Like those are very, very different things. And I think both of them need to be listened to. But I think all of us and many people listening to this podcast have probably crewed a runner at a big race, and they've come a point where they're talking to them and that person might be having stomach issues or their quads are trashed and it's mile 78 and you have to give them that Gene Hackman speech right there, get them off the chair and down the trail. And that kind of motivation leads to discipline.
Or we're going to include that clip in the show notes.
You got to find it. So also the discipline, if you're in a great group, a conga line that's just clicking the miles off, and you really love being there, you love the company, you love the conversation, you love the way it feels, but to be honest with yourself, you'll think, I can't hold this to the finish line. You have to have the discipline to step left and say, you guys keep going, and then you tag onto the back and fall back. And that takes some discipline, but it's you have to have that kind of honesty with yourself to forecast, what will this pace do for me? Yeah, I can do it for another 2 hours. I can't do it for another 4 hours.
I like, Andy, your analogy there, you know, as making a race, a microcosm of the whole training season. Mm-hmm. So at some point in a 50K or a 50 mile or 100 mile, 200 mile, whatever, you lose the motivation. Things hurt. You don't feel good. You're emotionally drained. The motivation is gone. Mm-hmm. But if you have the discipline that we've talked about, everybody talks about as a ultra runner, getting to the next aid station, just get to the next aid station. That's the discipline. Get to the next aid station. I don't care how I'm feeling. You acknowledge the feelings, but you get to the next aid station. And then sometimes that motivation comes back, or you say, okay, I've made it to this aid station. All I need to do is put one foot instead in front of the other, keep walking, keep running, keep shuffling, get to the next aid station. That's the discipline.
So, and in the training cycle, this is a great example, right? Let's say you're in a particularly hard part of your training cycle, and on a Thursday you're supposed to do, you know, 6x1 mile repeats, you know, hard VO2 max type workout. You know, and you're going to be like, oh my God, you're going to get to the fifth one. And there's no way I can do 6. It'll take that discipline where your coach might have said, well, you know what? Friday, you have a rest day, or Friday, all you have to do is do a 30-minute walk or whatever. That could be motivation enough where similar to getting out of the chair and getting down the trail. Nope, I'm going to do that 6th interval. It's definitely going to make the rest day all that much better.
So I'm going to put something out in front. I think about this often. I'm sure we've talked about it in all the episodes we've done. Is about it, and it really comes to discipline. I think if there was a way that you could, you know, maybe like a game avatar, you know, the video games that are out there today. So if you could put your
OG,
okay, boomer,
okay, boomer.
So yeah, if anybody's trying to guess what decade I was born in, TV was kind of novel. No. So if you could put your head inside your avatar, your runner, I know that every single runner in the event there wasn't like an ankle strain could get to the finish line successfully if you were balancing and running them like a video game. You'd back off because you were not emotionally attached like this person might be. Mm-hmm. You'd have the discipline because you're sitting back and you're watching it happen. You'll back their speed off. You'll increase fluids. You'll be able to do all these things because it's what's needed. We make a lot of mistakes when they're out there. Maybe we're too motivated. Maybe we're too aggressive and we just get out there and we don't step to the left when we should. But everyone at that start line, even though there's many times 53% finish rate, there could be well close to 100% finish rate if everybody managed and executed properly. So I think we have to be disciplined and we have to run ourselves like an avatar, and we're using some joysticks doing it and not physically in the middle of the heated battle. What do you think of that?
I think that really race execution, you're right. I mean, assuming the person is fit enough to make the cutoffs, right, in a race, yeah. race execution, especially as you get long, 100K, 100 mile, 200 mile, is all about just dosing out that effort. And the discipline it takes to do that is an art and a science, right? You can look at your heart rate monitor. You can look at the various things that these kind of external markers that tell you how much you're exerting yourself. But really, you only know as much as you know. And the more experience you have, of course, the better you are at saying, okay, I need to walk up this hill, or I need to stop at this aid station for 4 minutes and eat food. Of course, we know the trail is littered with people who've started out too fast and ended up coming back to the finish line in a car.
All right, Coach. We've talked about what is motivation and discipline and how they interact with each other. I want to know, how do we build or create more motivation, more discipline? So as an example, there are littered, I like your analogy there, the littered with people that go out too fast. There are a ton of people at the beginning of the year that say, here's my New Year's resolution. I'm gonna go on this diet and I'm gonna lose 20 pounds, or I'm gonna race a 50K. and they many times fail because maybe they're starting out too quick, or they're just flipping a switch and trying to change complete behaviors. How do you as a coach develop motivation, and how do you develop discipline?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. Developing motivation is almost like developing a muscle, right? Maybe let's call it the motivation muscle, right? And that you, the more motivated you are, the more motivated you become. Mm. So it really does kind of feed on itself, to the point where maybe the people around you think you're just obnoxious because all you talk about is Western States. I mean, I know a guy who sometimes gets accused of that. So you want to make sure that if you're coaching somebody and they're highly motivated, you want to keep that motivation, keep that fire. To use your fire analogy, you want to keep tossing kindling on the log. The log might be, you know, smoldering away in the campfire, but tossing that kindling on there once in a while to say, hey, you know, race day is 3 months away. Don't forget that. You got to get out the door, you know, that sort of thing. So you do want to you want to use motivation to fuel more motivation. Mm-hmm. Discipline, as I said, that's more of a state of being. That's more like you guys are talking about in terms of habits and getting some structures into your place. That is, you're much less likely to be able to depend on another person to make you disciplined. You can depend on another person to make you motivated with the halftime speech or whatever, but discipline is going to come from within and really from those practices and from those habits. And I think what fuels that are accomplishments, are achievements. And they could be, I ran a certain time for my favorite loop. It could be, I finally got under 200, you know, I'm under 200 pounds for the first time since college. It could be other non-running factors that are markers that, you know, focus you and make you disciplined. I mean, this is going way back in history. When I first started running ultras, I mentioned losing weight and so forth. My wife, Shelley, I ran a couple of 50Ks, and of course, like a lot of, this was in the early 90s, right? I ran a couple of 50Ks, and like a lot of people, I said, well, now I want to run a 50-miler. Well, my wife is pretty smart, and she didn't want me to run a 50-miler. So she said, you know what? I'm not going to let you do that until you weigh less than 175 pounds. And I was like, okay, well, my wife says I'm fat. And so I did it. I called her into the bathroom 3 days before this 50 miler. And I said, look at the scale, 174. That was discipline, right? That meant not having that extra dessert and, you know, maybe not having that extra hoppy beverage and so forth. So, you know, sometimes whatever it takes, if you want it badly enough, you'll get there.
Hey, AJW, what did the scale read when you stepped off the scale? That's what I want to know.
Zero.
Oh, okay. All right.
He didn't recalibrate the scale. Is that what you're accusing him of?
It's funny though, because I was 1992 and I still weigh 175 pounds. So,
well, that's good.
It worked.
So there's the discipline that needs to run consistent throughout all phases, not only your training, but also your sleep and your nutrition. And some of those keep you motivated. Some of those little successes that you're talking about, you need to have success along the way. So all of those other things are important. So if you're looking at your running and you're saying, I'm just not there, what's going on? Maybe you need to look at some of those other steps that allow you to be there. Now, this other point that you talked about, it's my best PR time on this section, and I know you were just using it as an example. I've used, how do I feel during this section of a standard run that we do? When my legs feel good and fresh, I'm not really worried about the time, and I don't want to beat myself up because people do get slower as years go on. I just look internally, do I feel good? I know I'm in shape if I feel relaxed during this last part of the run down the tracks as we're coming in. I use that part as my barometer, or that first hill that we climb as we turn left. If I run that whole thing and I'm still feeling like I'm breathing easy, I go, okay, I'm in the game. I feel good. I'm not really so concerned about the time. I just use some of that personal looking inside. How do I feel? And reading my body as a way to pat myself on the back. Because you got to pat yourself on the back. If you want to stay motivated, you got to do some self-patting.
You really do. And you have to, and it's okay, right? Nobody else knows you're doing that. And it's okay to say, damn, I just nailed that section. I felt really good. And I got to the top of this hill and that's great. I think that the more you do that, the more motivated you'll even become to do it again. And so that's a really good point about self-patting, because I think too many people are beating themselves up all the time and, oh, that sucked, or, oh my God, I'm getting so slow and, you know, age is catching up with me and all that stuff. And I think to flip that on its head, you know, look for those small victories, man, on that little hill right before the sign where there's that view, I wasn't even out of breath when I got to the top.
Yeah. Less self-punching, more self-patting.
Yeah, that's right. That's good.
Well, and I think that very relates to how, you know, back to the idea of New Year's resolutions, and you flip a switch and all of a sudden you're making these big changes in your life. Some research that's been done says that brain resists abrupt changes. Mm-hmm. And so we need to start slow and raise the baseline. So have some small successes and make that the new baseline, and then make that the new baseline. If we're trying to jump too quickly, we can be demotivated, mm-hmm. and then we lose that discipline to say, you know what, I've been doing all these things for 7 days now, and it's really hard, and things aren't changing, and I don't see anything. So you're demotivated. And then that is a self-fulfilling prophecy, that then the discipline starts to wane and say, you know what, I've done it for 7 days, you know what, I'm not going to do it for 3 days.
Scott, that's a very, very good point. And you should have brought that up earlier in the podcast when people were still listening. Because
when people were still listening.
Yeah. Now I've forgotten my point that I was going to say. No, so the body craves homeostasis.
Right.
It likes it doesn't like the abrupt change, because you have survival before the change. It feels comfortable. You've existed. And all of a sudden now a big switch is made, and the body gets a little bit nervous because it doesn't know whether it can handle this new change. So leading up slowly to this big training cycle change or this big distance change needs to be stepped in carefully so that the body doesn't push back. And so part of your motivation and your discipline might be the body naturally pushing back to the big change. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what was your point?
Well, then yes.
So Scott, I think Don wins the longest word of the podcast award, which is homeostasis.
Oh, you like the homeostasis?
Homeostasis. Yeah, that's good. Yeah. Let's get the definition in the show notes. I
didn't know, Andy, I didn't know it was one word. I thought it was three.
I think you're absolutely right, though, about the point about abrupt change, and I do think from a strictly sort of mental health reason, that's what the daily run does to so many people, does for so many people. It's whatever crazy stuff might be going on in their lives, and they're changing their jobs, and their kids are growing up, and they're, you know, having relationship issues or whatever. If they have that, you know, they have that 45 minutes to an hour every day where they know, hey, the whole rest of the world is going to hell, but at least I got my 45 minute run in. Right. So that's going to give them something to kind of cling to. And that kind of discipline is just great. I mean, I've gotten to that point where, you know, it's like the alarm goes off. It does take me a while to get out the door. You know, as you get older, I linger over my cup of coffee a little bit. But then the little things, like as the sun rises a little bit earlier each morning, and you get kind of excited about that, and then that adds to your motivation. I think all of those tools, whether they are, you know, are intrinsic or extrinsic motivators, are gonna end up paying dividends in building your discipline. And so I really like that idea of, you know, we know that there's going to be abrupt change, and so we want to find those places in our life where we can kind of insulate ourselves from those. And long distance running and training is certainly one of those places.
And I would like to propose that sometimes this motivation, a decline or decline in the practicing of discipline, might be just overtraining. It just might be, it's just your body's asking for a chance to back off a little bit. And so, you know, a few days off can be add to 3 good days of training. And if I could have, you know, 6 days of mediocre training or 3 days of just fantastic training and 3 days of rest to recover from that fantastic training, I'll take the 3 hard and the 3 off over 6 mediocre.
I completely agree.
You know, one of the things that I learned from Brad Kearns, who world-class triathlete.
And has a podcast, Get Over Yourself.
Yeah, yep. Get Over Yourself. He has a video online, and I'll if I remember, I'll link it. He talks about morning routine, and this goes back to, again, avoiding huge, abrupt changes and starting slow with small wins. And he talks about the morning routine that he has. And it's very simple. It takes like 5 minutes. You start while you're laying prone on the bed and doing some stretching exercises in bed. And it takes like 5 minutes. He said it's really easy to implement. It's a small win. And I think that is a good way to maybe start this good discipline and not jump all in.
Well, and I would say on the other end of the spectrum, well, as you guys know, in the last 5 years, especially, a lot more research has come out about the benefit of a good night's sleep and having good conditions and environment for sleep. The same can, I love Brad's point about a morning routine. The same thing can be true about an evening routine, attempting to go to bed at about the same time every night and making your room be dark, having good sort of sleep hygiene, if you will, not a lot of distraction in your sleeping space. I think those are the kinds of, again, it's all about habits and discipline, but you know, we all know that not all 8 hour night sleeps are the same level of quality sleep. Most people, I think, know when they've had a good sleep and had a bad sleep. And that morning routine, you get in there, you have your 5 minutes, you're up, you're out, you're going. So all of that kind of discipline, all of those factors play a role in your success in this sport.
So go ahead, Scott.
I just want to make one point, and then you know what your point is? You remember what it is?
I need to write it down. Go ahead.
And now I forgot what mine was.
So
shoot.
It's not as easy as it sounds, right? Okay, so on motivation, and I've been party to this, you know, if you're lacking some motivation, then sometimes you need to just put something on the calendar, something different, something unique, something that challenges you, something that makes your stomach flip a little bit when you're thinking about doing it. And if you're doing the same thing over and over, unless you're running Western States, you know, or something that motivates you just intrinsically, like you, Andy, you wouldn't need to be. No one needs to give you a shot of motivation in the behind to get ready for Western States. That's just part of who you are. But if you keep doing the same routine over and over, year after year, throw something else in there. Do that double crossing of the Grand Canyon. That's pretty spectacular. My goodness, what a beautiful opportunity to see the Grand Canyon on your feet. That's pretty rare. So find something, put it on a calendar, grab a buddy or a friend or somebody and do it.
Well, and I think that's true. I mean, it's important that it doesn't have to be a race.
Yeah.
Right. It does. Just as before we came on, remember, I have a buddy that I'm pacing at Western States and he invited me to come out in May and do some training on the course. Like that gives me something to look forward to. That I'm motivated. It's 2 months away and I'm, you know, I'm motivated for that because it's a fun training run with a group. Or let's say you have a vacation planned and part of that vacation, you have an opportunity to climb a big tall mountain and those kinds of things. I mean, so you're right. Putting that thing on the calendar, it doesn't have to be a race, but putting that really cool thing on the calendar, sometimes that's all it takes, you know, and then you have these other reminders, you see it on the calendar, maybe you have pictures of it on your screensaver on your phone or your computer. So you get these reminders that, oh, hey, remember 2 months from now, you know, we're going to the Grand Canyon. That can just, it can just fuel that fire, just keep throwing that kindling on the log and keep you going.
So you need to find something that makes your stomach do that flip, those little butterflies. You need to keep searching and scrolling and looking, and when your stomach does that, that's the one. It shouldn't be something you settle with. And you're motivated to come out in a couple months because you, as the athlete that you mentioned, he's pretty fast. So,
right.
So when you think you're going to come out and train in the canyons for a while with him, it's got to make your stomach flip a little bit. You're like, oh, crap.
So here's the question. Can fear be a good motivator?
Well, I think
is it an effective motivator?
There's a hashtag that probably that says that. Fear is one of the greatest motivators. When I was going to school and my study partner, that was what he always said. Fear is a great motivator. Fearing to fail that test would get us to study. So.
Well, and just think when, as we're getting ready for a big event like Western States or Hard Rock or UTMB, and I mean, everybody is usually just like worried about the weather and whether they have their stuff. Like they're just scared, right? I mean,
yeah.
It's scary to stand on that start line and the finish is 100 miles away. I mean, and that can be a motivator. Now, fear can also paralyze you, though. So again, that's a good time for a coach to talk through, you know, hey, I'm really nervous. I'm going to start out too fast. When I get nervous, I don't sleep or whatever else. You know, you want to admit that fear, but also don't have it like stop you in your tracks, because that does happen. And things can spiral downward quickly at that point.
Yeah. So great subject. Fear can be a motivator, but it can also tear you apart. It's wasted energy. It's wasted focus.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, I mean, fear is good to get you out the door, but then you have to let fear go away. And then you have to practice your art.
I've often said, especially with the athletes I coach going into Western States, it's okay to be scared right up until that gun goes off. But you need to, once you're going up that escarpment climb, the fear is out the back window.
If you're experiencing that kind of fear, I would suggest going to our podcast on vulnerability. Mm-hmm. Acknowledge the fear and don't be afraid to put yourself out there.
How did you pull that out of your internal file system, Scott? I'm impressed. That was good.
I have a massive brain.
And that fears me. And AJW, you were part of that podcast. That I remember.
That was a great. I would encourage listeners to do that because, you know, making yourself vulnerable is not easy to do. And yet it can be a source of strength, admitting your faults, leaving yourself exposed. It can really strengthen you. It sounds counterintuitive, but it can. I see it all the time in education and in running.
So will you link that podcast, Scott?
Yeah. Thanks for volunteering. You know, I'm gonna be a little bit vulnerable here personally. As we're talking through this, I will say that I was a little vulnerable recently because I knew I had signed up for a race.
Yeah.
I knew I was undertrained. I was scared crapless knowing that I was not going to finish. The part of my brain that was saying, okay, if I don't finish on ultra sign up, I'm going to have a DNF by my name. Is a DNF better than a DNS? Or is it worse than a DNS? And so I said, what the heck? And I went out there and I started running when the shotgun went off, and of course things didn't go as planned.
The buckshot hit you is what you're saying.
It felt like it. It felt like it after that second big climb. But I think that's an important part of this is acknowledge that there is a fear or a downside, and then say, to heck with it, I'm gonna put myself out there. And here's what I got out of that. Here's what I learned. What I learned was that I wasn't in good shape, that I needed to change, make some small changes in my life to increase my motivation and my discipline, mm-hmm. so that I can do better the next time.
Now, here's what I learned from listening to what you just said.
Okay. Don loves to repeat.
and listeners can hit rewind just a couple times, 15 seconds back, and hear this part, because you said, I knew I wasn't going to finish. You said those words. You already planted it in your head that this may not be the right outcome. And sometimes you have to go in like that start line where that avatar that anybody can finish as long as they're in reasonable shape and get those cutoffs done. To your point, Andy, not everyone. You can't pull somebody off the bus that's trying to get downtown to the quilting show and have them do a race. There has to be somebody's qualified for the race. But you kind of went off with it in your head that this might not be good.
Yeah, and that's a that, it's a, another ex- road we can go down maybe on a different podcast is because I thought that, was that a self-fulfilling prophecy in my psyche that said, ah, you know what? I'm not going to finish.
You're waiting for, when is this? When are the wheels going to fall off this vehicle?
Yeah.
Yeah. And you have to go in and really say, wheels are not falling off. I may not have the time that I would have had I been prepped and peaked for this race, but I'm finishing it and I'm going to execute this race. Because ultra runners are executors. That's the beauty of the sport.
Yep.
There isn't anybody that gives a rat's, you know, behind about your time. Nobody.
Right.
And so just executing is the brilliance of this sport. Whether you're first, middle, or last, it's execution. And maybe the last person executed the race better than the first place first in person. And it's about execution. Mm-hmm. And that's what I love. Doesn't matter if your belt buckle, to your point, AJW, one time and a while back, whether your belt buckle is yellow or silver, doesn't matter. I like the yellow term and not the brass. It doesn't matter. You're an executor, and that's what I love about this sport.
Well, Scott, I have to ask, speaking of execution, because thank you for bringing up that story about the race, because I know we've bantered a little bit back and forth about it before the podcast. What has it done? What is there something on the calendar now ahead?
Training.
I haven't paid for anything yet.
No, but I noticed an immediate change in Scott saying, "Hey, let's get out there and run." He was motivated then, which to get out there and train harder, longer, faster, more stuff than before the race.
So go full circle. I'm motivated to be more disciplined.
Yeah, that's
what was missing. To my self-experience with motivation versus discipline, I had the motivation to get out there and train. I had the motivation that I had this race on the calendar, but the thing that was missing, the missing link, was the discipline. Mm-hmm. And that comes from, you know what? I really enjoy getting out on the trails and running in the morning, and just spending time in the mountains. I think we all do. And when I can't have that, I don't want to settle for a 5 mile run on the roads.
Yeah.
And that's the problem I have, is I think, you know what, I don't have time to go up to the trail and run for 2 hours and come back and take a shower and get to work. I need to get over that and say, I still need to be disciplined. I need to put on my road shoes and go out for a 1 mile run, for crying out loud. If all I have time for is 1 mile, do the 1 mile, be disciplined to do it.
So let's give the pat on the back now instead of the punch on the chin. and
ouch.
And to our friend Bob Crowley's point, after that race, he gave you kudos. He said, you knew you weren't trained up for the race. You had feared that you hadn't done the work, but hats off to you. Kudos for going out there and putting yourself out there and being vulnerable and being confronted with the fact that it might not turn out the way you'd like. Good for you, Scott. You have courage. And I thought that's a true friend that never said one negative thing, and he picked you up, patted you on the back, and I thought, I need to go do a DNF.
You know, that's one of the beauties of our community. Like you said, they don't care what your time was.
Yeah.
They want to know, what did you learn? How did you feel? What was your experience? They want to talk about the experiences, not the result.
Yeah.
Well, hey, one of my favorite podcasts we've done is the Anatomy of a DNF from Don's Tour de France experience.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously your experience, Scott, was different than his with your DNF. But like hearing Don, and if you can link that to the show notes too, I strongly encourage people to listen to that, because you would have, if you didn't know Don at DNF, you would have thought it was the best race he'd had in his life because of all that he learned from the experience. And that's what this sport does for us, is it gives us so many rich experiences that we can take with us to all kinds of aspects of our lives.
Yeah, so more finishes than DNFs, luckily, and I learned more from that race than I did any victory race.
Yeah.
And by the way, it wasn't my idea to do that DNF podcast.
I know.
It's only because I like both of you guys.
We twisted his arm. His arms were like tied behind his back.
Well, I was very weak at the time from the DNF. I didn't have a lot of fight in me.
Hey, what a great
that was a really good podcast. So I know you didn't want to do it, but it was really good.
What a great discussion. Discipline and motivation. Hopefully the people who are listening had a good time listening to this. Boy, I sure had a good time talking about it. Start small. Find something that motivates you. Light the match. Like Don said, look for an event. It doesn't need to be a race. It could be the rim-to-rim crossing. It could be a fastest known time. It could be losing a few pounds. Whatever. Find something that motivates you and then put together a plan that starts easy and gives you some small wins. Making your bed in the morning. What was that video the other day, a couple years ago, about a Marine general or whatever you call them that said making your bed in the morning is the most important thing that you can do, because you can do it. It doesn't take a lot of time, and you can do it well.
That
and
was if, your wife, Scott. It wasn't a Marine general.
And if your whole day falls apart, you can still come back and say, I did succeed because I made my bed this morning. So start small, have some good successes. Get yourself a coach. I know, Andy, boy, what a great coach. We have a lot of great coaches on this podcast. They would love to help you fulfill your goals.
Do you have room left in your coaching, in your stable for more athletes?
Yeah, I do have a couple spots that have just opened up, and I'd love to, you can just find me on the Carmichael Training Systems website, cts.com. If anybody's interested.
All right, perfect. Well, I enjoyed the conversation myself. Andy, thanks for joining us on this. It's always better when you're on the podcast. So thanks for joining us.
It was a lot of fun, guys. Thanks a lot. It was great.
So get out and run.
Mas.